ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, October 16th, 2012 Harborough Board of Aldermen meeting. The first item on our agenda is requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. Let's see here.
Mark, people having trouble hearing you. I'm getting...
As a first.
I know.
All right. The first item on our agenda is requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. This is an opportunity for people who are here to speak to us on matters that are not already on our printed agenda, to raise new matters with us. Paul Van Ness, are you?
Yes.
Does that relate to an item that's already on our agenda? I don't think it does. Does
it?
You do. That's why you came, isn't it? All right, Paul, come on up, please.
I'm Paul Van Ness at 1215A Hillsborough Road, Carrboro. You have to forgive me, I am sick with pneumonia.
And, get down, Kathy.
I thought this was
so we'll all laugh at you. There you go.
And I'm a little nervous. Mohamed Bouazizi was a Tunisian street vendor who set himself on fire on the 17th of December 2010 in protest of the confiscation of his wares and the harassment and humiliation that he reported was inflicted upon him by a municipal official and her aides. His act became a catalyst of the Tunisian Revolution and the wider Arab Spring. And this kind of desperation is present everywhere, even here at home, and I feel we can prevent these acts. What I'm proposing is that we erect a sign under the two oak trees in the grassy area of the police parking lot across from the Century Center on the Greensboro Road side. And that sign should read, Artisan Park, a place for artisans making handmade wares and art, with some basic rules, such as all artisans must have a sales tax ID number, no permit required, in recognition that traveling artisans don't really have time for that, to sit in the town for, I think I'm waiting for about a month for my privilege permit, to be a peddler selling my art on the street, which I've already had before, but let's not get into that. And all these matters can be handled by an artisan park committee made up of the people participating in any selling of wares or art at the park. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Well, I think that's a good idea.
All right. Well, I think our usual procedure would be to refer this suggestion or petition to the town staff.
Maybe the Arts Commission.
And the Arts Commission.
And the Arts Commission, I reckon, would be relevant to you, and ask the commission and the staff to report back to us with a response.
Could I ask that included in that response maybe some alternative locations? Because I can think of some issues with that location without thinking of issues of the idea in general. Seems very cool.
All right. Good point. All right, so I'll take that as a motion from Sammy and a second from Jackie. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. This is our usual procedure for items that are not already on our agenda is that we refer them to our staff and potentially committees, and we'll hear back from them. Hopefully in relatively short order, we'll be in touch with you, Mr. Van Ness, so you'll know when this item comes back before us, and you can come and hear the discussion or participate in the discussion in the future.
Thank you for hearing me.
All right. Thank you. All right. That brings us to, is there anybody else, by the way, who's here to speak like Paul did on a matter that's not on our agenda. Okay, that brings us to item B1, a resolution of appreciation for Robert and Vicki Dixon in recognition of their contributions to journalism in Carrboro. I want to point out, I should have started the whole meeting by pointing out that Alderman Dan Coleman has come down with something this evening and is unwell and couldn't join us tonight. But so I point that out to you to explain his absence, but also I wanted to particularly make the point that he's the author of the resolution that the Board of Aldermen is about to consider. And so if I might ask for there to be a motion for this resolution.
So moved.
Second.
And moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. I would like to ask all of the Dixons, anybody named Dixon who's in the audience, to come join me up at the podium. And indeed, anybody from the Carrboro Citizen to come join me up at the podium for just a moment. I want to read you the resolution. The camera's over there, so it'll be good if you face that way. This resolution just passed by the Board of Aldermen says, a resolution of appreciation for Robert and Vicki Dixon in recognition of their contribution to journalism in Carrboro. Whereas Robert and Vicki Dixon founded the Carrboro Citizen in 2007 in recognition of the fact that, in Robert's words, Carrboro needs a newspaper. And whereas the Carrboro Citizen achieved a weekly circulation of 7,500 copies, and whereas in a time when local news media are hard-pressed to research necessary background and fact-check their articles, the Carrboro Citizen maintained impeccable journalistic standards. And whereas the Carrboro Citizen employed an outstanding staff, including local writers, editors, photographers, and graphic artists. And whereas the Carrboro Citizen covered all aspects of town and community life. And whereas this was achieved despite a national decline in newspaper readership each year that the Citizen was in business. And whereas the Citizen was launched at a time when many local newspapers were closing down or being bought up by national chains who subsequently decreased local coverage. And whereas national newspaper advertising revenues decreased annually each year that the Citizen was in business to the point that 2011 revenues were half of what they were in 2007. And whereas despite these obstacles and the financial challenges faced directly by the Citizen itself, Robert and Vicki Dixon soldiered on in their commitment to bring quality journalism to Carrboro. And whereas as a result of their efforts, the Carrboro Citizen became a much beloved Carrboro institution, each issue eagerly anticipated by thousands. And whereas, sadly, the Carrboro Citizen published its final edition on October 4, 2012. Now, therefore, the Carrboro Board of Aldermen declares its appreciation of Robert and Vicki Dixon for their great contribution to journalism and community life in the town of Carrboro. And I'll also point out Susan Dixon, the editor of the Carrboro Citizen, is up here as well with us. So I want to personally say that, frankly, it is often our experience as local elected officials. I've been a local elected official a long time in this community, and it's often been our experience that certain publications have reporters who contact us with questions that indicate very little context or very little understanding of our community, and that take an awfully long time to answer. And that our experience in working with the Carrboro Citizens, writers and editor, was an outstanding experience in which that sort of thing was never a problem. We're very proud to have been home to your newspaper, and I just want to say thank you all for all that you've done for our community and continue to do, actually, outside of the Citizen. So, anyway, thanks. Thank you very much. Thank you.
many businesses that go out of business and get a standing ovation. Maybe if
Carver, be reported.
Maybe if Carver had a McDonald's, y'all might do that. First of all, we're glad you liked what we did. You know, a community newspaper is a whole lot like a community at large. For you guys, it's a really nice resolution, but for it to just list me and Vicki, it would be like y'all doing a resolution of appreciation to, David and Mark from Carborough. You know, there's a whole lot of other people that had to do with the Citizen. It was a real community effort, and that's why it was a success. And my neighbor, Sasa Fransky, told me a while back, and I've kept this in my head for a month or two, is that there are many good things in life that can be described as not making money. And I think the Citizen is one of them, and that's why I'm pleased that there is a group trying to do a nonprofit. I think that's a real possibility for community newspapers to survive and to flourish. The economics aren't the same as they used to be. But if y'all would bear with me, there's so many people that were involved in this project that to just have us three up here just seems really an injustice. And so I'm gonna make you listen to a few people. You know, it starts off with Kirk Ross, who co-founded this newspaper. It goes to Taylor Sisk, who's been with us since before the beginning, who's the absolute anchor of the newsroom. I mean, you know, it's just amazing. I mean, Susie has been with us since the beginning, and you know, when I get through, she's got about 3 hours of remarks she'd like to make to y'all. Since she had to listen to y'all for a little bit. There's Liz Holm, who was the art director, who was the responsible for our colorful look, and there's Michelle Langston, who designed our website. And our final regular staff included Ann Billings, our office person, Marty Cassidy, Duncan Hogue, our designer, Rose Latacina, who was our reporter. We had volunteer photographers. We had lots of volunteers because lots of people didn't get paid. They just wanted to work for their community newspaper. And our photographers included Alicia Stemper, whose wonderful photos grace the front page of our newspaper every week. Ted Spaulding, who took Carborough High sports photos, and they meant so much to our community. We got lots of comments about that. And David Jesse helped out. Our regular contributors included Val Schwartz, you can't even describe Phil Blank. I mean, he's just he's one of a kind. Eddie Landreth, who, if you cut him, he bleeds Carolina blue. Martin Brody, who did our CryptoQuotes. I mean, not many newspapers have their own CryptoQuote specialist, it seems to be. Jock Lauderer, my friend, the follically challenged Jock. And last, but absolutely, well, there's other ones. The doctors Adam Goldstein, Christy Page, Adam Zolotor from the UNC Family Medicine, who put in, that column, House Calls, was done just for us. I mean, that didn't appear to anyplace else. And then last, but absolutely not least on the list of our regular contributors is the astounding Ken Moore. He's got Penland held at, he's got them under siege right now, so he's not here. We had Mill contributors, our monthly publication, including Mary Saunas, who wrote about fauna. If you didn't learn everything you wanted to know about the coyotes and I guess owls. It was great. Margot Lester, who wrote about film for us. Ashley Meltzer, who did music. The Beer Guys, Jason Cole, Evan Crouch, Israel Lazaro, Andy Dodson, who, Whoever would have thought a column about beer every month would have been, I just loved it. And then Kirk and Vicki contributed every month. We also had former photographers that won awards for us, and including the wonderful photo of Ida and Bill Friday that's on our website right now, done by Ava Barlow, and the and Alex Manis and Isaac Sandlin, right. He was a guy, another volunteer that just took award-winning photos. We've been blessed by that. And we had so many interns from the J School, and we had citizens who cared enough to write letters and comments and to write columns because they cared about this place. And, I'm sorry, I feel bad standing up here talking about the end of this newspaper, but I would ask one thing is that, don't lament the passing, celebrate the life,
Thank you. Susan, who's going to sit down right now, is not just a second-generation newspaper woman, but I think at least a third.
She would be the fourth.
A fourth generation. The Dixons have been a landmark feature in North Carolina journalism for four generations now. Robert and his family were the editors and publishers at various times of the, I believe it's the Roanoke Rapids. Rayford, North Carolina newspaper as well. We're proud to, what makes me most proud in a lot of ways of the Citizen is the percentage of the people that you just named, Robert, who are residents of our community, who are residents of, and I just don't mean the immediate area, I mean residents of the town of Carrboro. I think it was an incredible effort, and we appreciate everything that y'all did to help cover our community, and we look forward to what comes next. None of us know what that will look like, but it's clear that the world of journalism has been changing and changing rapidly over the last 5 years, and we hope that there is a way that the changes that have been happening in journalism as an industry will in some way find a way to continue to produce, continue to put forward the kind of local content that and local value that the Carrboro Citizen brought to our community. So thank you all.
We will continue to maintain the website as an archive, and I hope to stick that up and make it interesting.
And if I may just touch on a slightly sensitive topic and just say that there were some other media outlets in our general area who were critical of the Citizen, of the town of Carrboro, when the Carrboro Citizen took out a loan from the town of Carrboro's Small Business Revolving Loan Fund. And first of all, let me say, I think it's important for everybody to know that that loan is current and that there is a plan in the works for the full repayment of the loan, which we're appreciative of. But I also want to say, there was a, I guess maybe I won't name the newspaper by name, but there was a newspaper whose reporters called me and back when the Board of Aldermen made the decision to make that loan, who called me and said, "Well, isn't this some kind of conflict of interest? Isn't this some kind of problematic situation to have the local government lending money to
one of the media outlets that covers our local government. And first of all, I pointed to out to them how absurd that was, that there were terms of that loan. They were written down. They were on paper. And it had nothing to do, obviously, with what the editorial content of the newspaper would be, number one. But number two, I said, you know, you guys have a lot of nerve to call me and offer criticism of what these people are doing. Because I searched your website just now, meaning the newspaper that was calling, and the last article that you wrote about Carrboro was 23 days ago. So it seems like y'all have an awful lot of nerve to be critical of an effort to cover our community when in fact what you deliver is, you know, over 3 weeks old. Anyway, Robert, Susan, and Vicki, thank you all, and best of luck in your future endeavors.
Thank you very much.
We'll pay you
back that
one. You're definitely going to have to now that I announced it. Yeah, where is that? They have a mountain of paper up here for me, so I apologize.
I'm just sorting through some things.
I would now like to, we will get to our printed agenda, I promise you, but before we do, I would like to invite the Honorable Jay Bryan to come up to the podium and join me up here.
I didn't even see him.
You've heard that one before. I've issued this proclamation today, and I want to read it. Whereas Jay Bryan has organized and facilitated poetry readings at the Carrboro Day since its beginning in 1995, and whereas Jay Bryan has served the town of Carrboro in many ways, including as an alderman from 1987 to 1997, and whereas Jay Bryan proposed the idea of the Carrboro Poet Laureate position to the town of Carrboro in 2002, and whereas Jay Bryan has served as the Poet Laureate of the town of Carrboro since February of 2010, and whereas Jay Bryan organized the Carrboro Poets Council in 2011, and whereas Jay Bryan has led the Carrboro Poets Council in the planning and organization of the 2012 West End Poetry Festival, and whereas Jay Bryan has written eloquent poetry about Carrboro, now therefore be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, the mayor of the town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim October 20th, 2012 as Jay Bryan Day in the town of Carrboro, North Carolina. Jay, we have always been honored and appreciative of our association with you as a former resident and as a nearby neighbor of our town, and so I want to present you with a copy of this resolution.
Thank you so much.
And say
appreciate
thank
it.
You for all the time. Say thank you. You know, that proclamation focuses mostly on your role in our community as a poet, but obviously probably most of us are already aware that that there are many other things that you've done as a member of our community. Judge Bryan, before becoming such, was, he did an awful lot of things, but among many other things was a huge advocate and participant I'm going to blank on the name. I apologize, but the
Shaping
Orange County's future. He serves currently on our Northern Transition
Area Advisory Committee. He, I'm not sure if you are now, but he has certainly served in the past on the Orange County Planning Board. I believe you were one time the chair of the Orange County Planning Board. And one thing that many of y'all may not know is that Jay has volunteered his time with the Orange County Court System for decades now, frankly, representing the interests of minor children in making sure that he looks out for children who have no other advocate in our community, who have no one else to represent them in court. And anyway, we're just proud to have you as a member of our community, Jay, and say thank you very much.
Poem.
I don't have a poem. This is a poem. So first of all, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm very touched. And when you're a volunteer, that you just do that work and you love it, and you get so much more from what you get and from the giving process. I want to recognize the members of the Poets Council who are here. And didn't tell me what this was about. So Susan Spalt, if you'd stand up. Catherine Devine, Tyler Johnson. Come on, stand up, Tyler. And Salisa Steele is not here, but this festival is coming up on the 19th and 20th of October.
Friday and Saturday.
We're competing with the Duke game, UNC game, but that was just the way we it worked out. So I just want to say that none of this, the poetry festival would have been possible without the wonderful work of everybody on the council. We all work together, and I really encourage you to come. There's some very fine poets who are reading, and the I want to say that the town of Carrboro supported the Poetry Festival for many years. Even in the toughest of budget times, Carrboro Day and the Poetry Festival have survived. And the Parks and Recreation Department has been wonderful with the Arts Committee helping us on this project and giving us the opportunity to do it. So anyway, Adam Shapiro, who is a professor here at UNC and a nationally known poet, whose book of poetry, is a finalist for the National Book Award, which is an incredible honor. So he will be reading on Saturday night at around 7:30, but also on Saturday in the afternoon doing a session on poetry and so on. I just hope that some of you will come to that event. And then on Friday night, there's a poetry reading at Flyleaf Books. It begins at 6:30 to 8:30. A reception follows, too. Okay? That's enough. Don't you have an agenda somewhere?
Somewhere.
So I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Speaking of our regularly scheduled agenda, I'll find it somewhere. Here it is. That brings us to item C1, our consent agenda. Mr. Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of the board, there are 9 items on your consent agenda. The minutes from October 2, a letter of interest to the APA for the Building Blocks for Sustainable Communities Program, appointments to the Appearance Commission, Transportation Advisory Board, and Arts Committee. Item 4 is the execution of a contract for administrative consulting services for the CDBG grant related to Roberson Street Sewer. Item 5 is for a contract for photovoltaic installation at the Town Commons. Items 6, 7, and 8 are all very similar. The extension of the conditional use permits to January 1 of 2014 for the Roberson Square CUP, the Butler CUP, and the Litchfield AIS CUP. And item 9 is contract for professional services with NCDOT, as well as NCDOT for preliminary engineering services for bicycle detectors. Mr. Mayor.
All right. Is there a motion, are there any items that y'all want to discuss separately?
Move the consent agenda.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded for the entire consent agenda. That's got to be a first. All those in favor signify by saying surely there's something. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, not a passage unanimously. That brings us to item D1, request to consider proposals.
Mr. Mayor, if I may.
See, I told you there would be something.
No. I'd like to ask that item.
Yes, I apologize. I forgot. You mentioned to me earlier. We have some scheduling issues that are going to require us to move up the Greenways item. So if we could. That's item D6.
Right. If we can move that to the first one.
We'd like to go straight to item D6, an update on the Morgan Creek Greenway.
Mr. Mayor, this is Trish McGuire. You want to give a brief staff report?
Good evening, everyone. So the purpose of the agenda item this evening is for the board to get a quick update on where we are with the planning for the Morgan Creek Greenway, and specifically for the board to provide direction to the staff that we would then provide to the consulting firm that is working on the Morgan Creek Greenway preliminary plans, or excuse me, construction plans. And because of some information that has come up in the preliminary work that they're doing on the preliminary engineering, a little bit of background for folks and the board too. The conceptual master plan for the Morgan Creek Greenway was approved in March of 2010, and the preliminary engineering got underway early this year, and it is currently ongoing. There are two alignments that are shown in the preliminary conceptual, in the master plan for the project, and the first one is on the northern side of Morgan Creek, and it runs from Smith Level Road over towards the Canterbury Townhome area. And there is a trail that would go up to the Canterbury Townhomes to, in this location, the trail would go across the creek and would connect up with the more western portions of the trail and later phases. And then the alternate is on the occurring on the south side, or is proposed to occur on the south side of Morgan Creek in this location, running through a Duke power easement, and then hooking up with areas of open space that were provided to the town as part of the Berry Hill subdivision development approval. The Greenways Commission, and let me just stop and say, when the Greenways Commission reviewed these concepts before, you know, back in the conceptual planning process, there was a lot of consideration of these two alternates, and it was very, elaborate or extensive discussion, because there are very different options associated with them. And at that time, the Greenways Commission asked that if there was a reason for some change as this design went forward to preliminary engineering and then construction, that they would have a chance to take a look at it again. That is to say, the route on the northern side was called the preferred alternative, and the one on the southern, the alternate. And we're under a tight schedule for this project. This project is one of our bond-funded projects. And in light of that and the Greenways Commission's quarterly meeting schedule right now, we did take it back to them before we brought it to you so that we could get their feedback and, expecting that you might refer it back to them in light of their earlier requests. So we did bring in early September, this question to the Greenways Commission, a report from the consulting firm doing the preliminary engineering, and the Greenways Commission did review the information. And the information essentially is that the floodway analysis has been underway, and what they've determined is it isn't possible for a creek crossing to occur, a bridge to be located in this spot. So there isn't. Phase one of this project did include this crossing, and the flood study that's been underway has determined that's not possible because it will cause too much of an increase in the flood elevation and have an effect on insurable structures. And so it isn't something we would be able to obtain to obtain a map amendment for. So the Greenways Commission reviewed this information with the consultant and made a recommendation that we proceed with the alternate instead of what has been called the preferred alternative for the alignment. And it's a difficult decision. They're very different in the function of these two trails in some respects and the neighborhoods they serve. Ultimately, the intention is to provide this east-west corridor and provide this greenway connection along Morgan Creek. As a follow-up, the board liaisons to the Greenways Commission and the Greenway Commission chair and staff met to sort of discuss the implications of the situation a little bit further. And in so doing, looked at the options that were in the plan itself, as well as and brought up some other questions, and decided to quickly just get back and talk with the Greenways Commission once again, and then schedule an agenda item to bring this to the Board of Aldermen so that you all could provide us feedback, again, recognizing the schedule we're working under to complete the preliminary engineering and move towards construction of the trail. So there were many ideas discussed in that setting, and one of them was to look at the pedestrian and bicycle safety issues that are occurring on South Greensboro Street and Smith Level Road, and as seeing that as a linkage to the Greenway for along Morgan Creek. So that was a point that was discussed. The materials at your places and in the packet does provide more information about that, and I can go into more detail on it if you would like to. But I might try to just, for the presentation, just focus on the options that we have in front of us and sort of the timing and implications of that and the staff's recommendations for the next step for the town. We did provide some specific follow-up about potential improvements that could occur along Smith Level Road and South Greensboro Street. But the Greenways Commission took a look again on October 10th at the options, the alternative, and the preferred alignment for the Greenway, and the information from the board liaisons and the Greenway Commission chair meetings, and had more discussion of these points. They did decide to not take any specific action different from their recommendation to choose the alternate alignment. But they did note several things, or the staff would note that there are several things. There are very diverse viewpoints on these alignments. There is one particular point that came out that has come out since the concept plan was approved in 2010, of course, is the change of Frank Porter Graham to a magnet school rather than a more of a neighborhood school in terms of the district boundaries for it. The another point that's really important to consider is just the need for us to complete the preliminary engineering and really in full all that we can with the funds we have so that we sort of have in the bank that design for the project should funds come available beyond, in the future, beyond what we have currently in STPDA funds and also in bond funds. So there's just the interest in keeping the momentum going there and completing the preliminary engineering. And then there was really one of the options that was discussed, that has been discussed, is and was discussed by the consulting firm, is rather than having a bridge in this location, whether or not the town would like the engineering firm to explore a shadow bridge here adjacent to the bridge that does exist right now over Morgan Creek at Smith Level Road. And that would allow that shadow bridge essentially to already be captured in the flood floodway impacts that the existing bridge present. So from a modeling perspective, it can be that type of construction can go in, and it doesn't present a whole other impact to the flood and a need for a map modification to the map. So there was no interest in pursuing that, although there has been some consideration of potentially using and exploring a bike and pedestrian lane, dedicated bike and pedestrian lane along Smith Level Road itself.
Trish, for the initial recommendation to approve alternative phase one. It's for engineering and construction, and also part of my question is, does it include the crossing of the road, or what kind of stream crossing? Would it connect to Smith Level, or what is that? What would that be? Is it what's illustrated here?
Is the on-road
option
a part of the project?
We would be approving tonight.
No, not formally.
Alternative phase one.
No. That's a separate, it's not part of the design that CJT is working on. That's the stuff that we would
explore. Alternative phase one ends at Smith Level Road?
Yes.
And is there a connection, like?
Well, either, I mean, phase one, let's say phase one, not, you know, the preferred or the alternate, ends at Smith Level Road.
Okay, either one of those things. Okay.
If I may, there's another consideration in that terminal point at Smith Level Road, that intersection of the Greenway and Smith Level Road, is that the Smith Level Road improvement widening project will have a median on Smith Level Road, so that the bicyclists will have to stay on the west side of Smith Level Road if they're traveling toward town. And there will be a bicycle lane, but that provides some complication. It's not bad to be traveling toward traffic, but when there are bicyclists coming the other way, it can be a little perilous. So there will be no way across the level road other than to dismount from your bike and, you know, basically dodge and jump the median to get to the east side to be traveling north toward town. So that's why the consideration of perhaps discussing with the NCDOT about a portion of the bridge on the west side that would be dedicated to bicyclists, either north and south, that would perhaps serve a purpose of allowing traffic to move both directions safely.
Right. I guess related to that point, I'm wondering, with the Smith Level Road about to be constructed, is it maybe probably too late, or maybe not even significant, but because it ends at the bridge, but if there's an opportunity to change the design slightly to facilitate what you're describing, I'd be interested in knowing if that's a possibility. Or
DOT, we've raised the question a couple of times in this process with DOT about making some changes on the Smith Level / South Greensboro Street bridge across there. I mean, some physical changes. Now you're talking about some essentially marking changes on the road.
Yes.
That I think is worthy of discussion. But in terms of physical changes to the bridge, they have been, I can tell you, adamant, to say the least of it, about the fact that the project stops before it gets to that bridge. So they're not interested in making any sort of physical changes to the bridge in terms of construction. But
The project limits don't include the bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the project just does not include the bridge. So they're not interested in hearing about any kind of widening of the bridge or any kind of anything along those lines. But marking the existing width of the bridge differently is, I mean,
that's
kind of a different conversation. So mm-hmm. we can certainly try on that front.
Or related to that is, if there's a median, then at least as a minimum, a side a crosswalk across. Mm-hmm. Especially since they're about to construct that. I mean,
on the north side over the bridge, if you modify the roadway on the north side of the bridge there, right where DOT is, there's a stoplight also for crossing traffic.
Mm-hmm. But I think the Smith Level Road doesn't go that far. It'd be more before the bridge, right, for a crosswalk to the east side.
Well, particularly since we have incorporated into the plan a sidewalk on both sides. So, and, you know, it was a question that this board, you were here, but this board raised at the time was, you know, we're bringing the sidewalk all the way down to the creek on the east side there. And, you know, where exactly is anybody supposed to go?
Well, it's actually stopping a little bit south of the Willow Oak Lane. I don't think it's coming all the way to the, I think they tried to bring it to a point. I'm looking to see if Jeff is here.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And it does come to a little bit below the Willow Oak intersection.
North Willow Oak Lane. Oh, okay.
It'll terminate with a crosswalk, you know, through the median, essentially.
Oh, okay.
So you're correct. Originally, it was going to go down to the limits of the project, and it did end
up hanging out there. We had a compromise on that
point.
I got you. Okay. Yeah.
And ironically, it was because it was going to nowhere, but this would have been the perfect connection.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But go ahead.
So this is an interesting and complex set of questions that are in front of us. First and foremost is the fact that we currently do have this municipal agreement between the town and DOT, and that it is, and our agreement, our contract with CJT is based on the approved conceptual master plan for the Morgan Creek Greenway. So we've got all these sort of parameters that are already spelled out in agreements and so forth, and the contract itself for CJT took a pretty long time for us to negotiate, and so it means that the time we have left to us is really precious in terms of getting this project completed. We do have an expiration date for the, you know, I mean, a sort of a point certain when we've got to spend the money for the bonds. So we need to work as quickly as possible to get these things done. So we don't have a big buffer for making a decision, and I don't mean to underscore that point too much, but it does it is relevant to us being able to move forward. And of course, we are leveraging these bond funds, our own bond funds, with the federal transportation dollars, which we need to make sure that the scope of the project makes sense so that we can meet the terms of our agreement with DOT.
Our local contribution is what percentage of the project?
20%.
So we get, point is, every cargo dollar going in gets multiplied four times in federal dollars going in.
That's right. So as I mentioned, there are a number of considerations, and you've heard a couple of those, and the crossing on the bridge itself. There are some other the South Greensboro Street and Smith Level Road improvements, roadway improvements for pedestrian and bike safety. There is also the question of how do we deal with the underpass to connect up eventually with the Chapel Hill Greenway, and then the creek crossing and the preferred or alternate alignment. And in the staff's opinion, the preferred and the alternate alignment are sort of the principal question on the table, and of immediate interest, and so in relation to that, we have provided a recommendation for to follow up with the board's consideration of these various points. As I said, I could go through each of them if you'd like, or not. I'd really like to let you tell me what you would like me to do in that regard, since
we'll
it will
ask
take a few
questions.
Take a few moments to go through them. I did want to say that we provided at your places a revised recommendation, which changes the focus just slightly, and it's just that we recognized in looking at the materials that the best thing for this project, and it's within the memo itself, but the recommendation didn't fully capture it, and the best thing for this project will be for us to get as much information about as much of the preliminary engineering done at this time as possible, and that ultimately, both sides of the creek provide differing benefits to the neighboring residents and property owners. So from a design perspective, the best situation would seem to be to do the preliminary engineering for both, but to select, for the purposes of moving forward to construction, one of the alternates, phase one, the preferred, or the alternate. And so the recommendation, the revision to the recommendation, just adds in, makes it clear that the direction the staff would be giving would be for the pursuit of construction of one of the alignments, but that you would be directing CJT to actually do the preliminary engineering for both, as well as a couple of other things. Staff continuing to work with NCDOT and Coulter Jewell Thames to pursue the use of Smith Level Road as a possible bike and ped lane, And then the underpass situation as well, the linkage to the Chapel Hill portion of the Morgan Creek Greenway, and other things as well, if you have something else you'd like us to do.
Trish, is there the money that's that is available now, would it cover preliminary engineering for both phases, alternate phase and preferred alignment? Alternate alignment, preferred alignment?
We think so because of removing the flood study piece from phase one. And I'm going to look for a nod to be sure that that's... We don't know for certain. We think so. We don't have...
For those of you at home, the two staff members looked at each other and you know, nodded. But anyway,
we are removing a piece of the project by not continuing the flood study for
now
bridge
it's
crossing.
Saved money.
Which is it's expensive.
And one of the comments it says that the commission would prefer that a bridge further north or south be considered. Is that an option at all, or is that just totally out of the picture?
As I understand it, really the next location where a bridge is going to work in here is going to be back here, which is included within phase two. And I guess there's been some discussion about whether or not those...
Can you show us?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes,
resolutions up there.
Just get you there. My apologies. So this is the phase two of the project back here, and there's a bridge crossing right here. So this is the Berry Hill neighborhood here. We're going to come around. If you're looking at a map, the blue line is the Morgan Creek itself. And so there's a crossing back here. And there's been some discussion about whether or not that should be designed at this time. So I think we're going to be exploring, how much we can do with the dollars.
But if we do that one, that
would obviously affect, because that would be, we wouldn't be removing a bridge. We would be keeping a bridge design there. But this is the next location where we think it can happen without affecting any insurable structures, and that's because of the flood elevations in relation to buildings. Mm-hmm.
Trish, explain where that one goes to so that folks get oriented.
It's going to bring folks down. Tom's Creek is, I've got an overall here, let me see, of the project.
Yeah, that's what you're really dealing with.
Yeah, so the crossing is looking sort of in this location here, so it's coming towards the tennis club property. This is Weatherhill Point right over here, Berry Hill.
The swimming point to the approximate location of the swimming pool down there.
The swimming pool at the tennis club?
Yeah.
I think it's right in. Maybe this is it right
there. Yeah, it's right there.
Yeah, that's it right there.
That's it right there, just for perspective.
Westbrook Drive, tennis club.
Swimming pool, tennis courts.
Tennis courts,
okay.
Yeah, over here.
All right.
So, yeah, it would be coming in this location.
So this is
phase two of the Greenway.
If I could jump in for a second while you got that illustration up. You know, the way it really works out is that where you see that those purple swaths, particularly the dark purple swath, gets really... It is fairly wide, basically to build a bridge in those type of locations, the bridge has to be super high. It has to be hugely high up above the creek in order to clear adequately the creek to prevent causing any further flooding problems. That's really what it gets down to. And the challenge is, from my point of view, the challenge is that the places where it gets relatively where the purple dark purple swath is relatively narrow and where it would be more therefore a little bit more feasible, less costly to build a bridge. And by the way, this has to be an Americans with Disabilities Act accessible bridge, so it can't be with stairs or whatever. Where things get relatively narrow, so that you could build a bridge, also happens to be the places where you're building basically almost right into the backyards of houses in the Berry Hill neighborhood because, you know, in other words, where the floodplain is narrow is because the land is very steep and people's backyards and the position of houses with respect to the creek, because Berry Hill was built many years ago, you basically wind up with the creek having to come right into, not literally into, but the bridge having to come possibly literally in some cases, but very nearly into the backyards of existing houses in the Berry Hill neighborhood. That's really what the issue boils down to. It's tempting to say, well, gosh, there's this big, broad, open area up there. We'll just cross the creek up there. Well, it won't bother anybody. But the reality is that it would have to be the Golden Gate Bridge in order to be high enough up to clear that area and not wind up, you know, looking through people's windows. Well, I'm just anyway, just trying to point out what the kind of what the physics or engineering considerations behind all this really boil down to.
But that is the next location where it's feasible. As far as I mean, again, this is a preliminary plan, not a.
Point being, the relatively flat land is where all the houses got built,
right?
You know, not surprisingly, yeah. and the steep / low land is what the Berry Hill development gave to the town of Carrboro at the time because they didn't want it, and understandably so because it's all down in the floodplain.
And you see from this, and I'm glad you put that one up, Trish. You can see that the game plan is for the Greenway to go, the Morgan Creek Greenway to go from Smith Level Road to University Lake, so that essentially you'd be able to go from University Lake, exactly, from University Lake through to Smith Level Road and then further east into Chapel Hill to Merritt's Pasture.
But
to the botanical gardens, actually.
But crossing the creek, what, twice or three times?
There were two crossings shown in the plan, and then there's a on Morgan, and then there's a crossing on Tom's.
Right.
So the
as originally conceived.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
So for
the preferred alignment.
Right.
The reason for still studying engineering for the preferred alignment, even though there will be no connection, is simply to have a leg going from the roundabout to Smith Level Road at some point.
I'm sorry. Could you say that again?
We're talking about allocating some engineering to the phase one alignment and the alternate alignment?
Yes.
The idea there would be the preferred alignment obviously won't have a bridge connecting, so it would be more about connecting the roundabout in the Canterbury townhomes mm-hmm. to yes. the road.
That's right.
It would stop short of the creek.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay. Yeah, it would be this sort of spur trail,
right?
That
exactly.
would connect here
short
and then
spur.
Bring folks down to Smith Level Road, or you know, underneath the bridge to connect to Chapel Hills Greenway,
right.
Or just connecting back to this phase and then eventually to you know to the rest of the trail.
Well, we don't have too many options.
And well, there actually is one other crossing that goes back towards crosses Morgan Creek to get over to the high school. But
right, that's so
okay.
There's a later plan.
Trish, if you're done.
Yep.
I'm sure we'll call you back in just a moment, but I have Bob Kirshner signed up to speak. Let me recognize Mr. Kirshner, who is a member of our Greenways Commission. I see our chair of the Greenways Commission is also here. We'll call on him in just a moment.
How you doing? Thank you for recognizing me. Going back to the beginning with the commission was looking at with the consideration of the phase one as being the preferred. It's really where we want to really hoping for, and was a lot of promise that some sort of bridge somewheres in this section could be could be built, but the floodplains were just so that there's the final analysis is just nowhere in here a bridge could be built with the range there. One of the things was asked was maybe look maybe up in this section here because this was elevated up here. But they just said it still just could not make this connection. So this leg just could not be built. You know, so in the early phases with the Greenway Commission, we said, just in case, let's have a phase one possibility here and have it come back to us. I know we did not anticipate to have a two-hour meeting, being blindsided with a two-hour meeting and say, make a decision tonight of what's all
since
all
you
about.
Mentioned that, I'm going to start the timer on you.
So, I think there was some confusion about exactly what was being involved here, and I think that the Greenway recommendation was to just so we can get things started, just do this section, do the design here, phase two design. We were, and I believe the engineering for the bridge, build phase 1A, and as much of phase 2 as could be done. There's some question about whether there was an understanding of whether that did include, the construction included the bridge or not. It is clear now that that bridge could not be built with the funds available. There was some heavy discussion about this, and this is what I'd like to bring to your attention now. And what I'm about proposing to you is several considerations for this whole area. This is the east end of the Greenway Trails. We want to do get the construction going on that. What's important about this, if we could turn this, and if we could bring it down any, maybe I can slide this down a little. What I need to point out is, where's yellow? Thank you. Sorry, folks. this leg here, and I'm proposing this as being more of a trail spur, which could be built on a smaller scale than the actual trail, which has to meet the
DOT standards.
What I need to point out is people have referred to this, that's just the Canterbury and only serves Canterbury, and I need to point out, no, it's serving Royal Park, Carolina Apartments, Chamber Apartments come down 54. So people in these residents have access to this road here, which is Abbey Lane, which would make that connection. So this actually becomes a significant, safer connection avenue down to a stoplight that can cross the Smith Level Road. There's no sidewalk in this section of NC-54 on either side. You know, so, matter of fact, I don't think there's a sidewalk on this side either, but they walk along the roadway. There is sidewalk on Abbey Lane on that side of Abbey Lane. So once they get to that entranceway, they have a sidewalk which brings them down to the cul-de-sac, and that's where we're going to be extending the spur trail. What's important is I will put also within this community is a lot of UNC people that work or go to school at UNC as well. So this makes it, this is an important corridor that to be considered here. And making the link to the Chapel Hill side, I believe in early discussions was using a portion of the public works area as a trailhead parking area, and eventually making this parking area as the public works may move further on. And I think there was even some discussion of possibly even open up a few space by relaying the fencing there. They might even open up a couple spaces now. So it becomes becomes the trailhead, which would cross the Smith Lower Road Bridge, and then would pick up the construction phase, do the engineering through phase two, do the construction up to the original stop of the phase one, which would be just to the side of the Berry Hill. They have their paths there. So the surface of this is now opens up the corridor for the Berry Hill to make the connection to Frankfort and Graham and the Chapel Hill Greenway, and shared access between us as well as the roadway access. And the same thing, it gets people off the Superhighway 54, gives them an alternate way to get down here where there's a bus stop or continue on down into Chapel Hill. What was considered is where this was designed was not dumping people into Berry Hills park area, recreational area, their private recreational area. But if you do the phase two, that would bring people closer into that area that they had some concerns with, construction-wise. So basically, if we do this, if you just build this side, eliminate this and just build this side, you have, it will stop there. There'd be no place to go. It's just serving the Berry Hill community, and that's it. If we can include this piece, it's opened up to a whole lot of other corridors. So that's what I'm, basically what I'm proposing is build this as a spur, which could be a smaller and less expensive set of the trail, initiate the trailhead right here, crossing over, modifying the Smith Lover Road, do this phase of it, which opens up this corridor here. Do the engineering so we can through the bridge side here. And this follows along suit with what we intended, what the Greenway put together in the phases-wise. Start on the east end and keep working west in those different phases, connecting all the neighborhoods eventually. The Canterbury with Berry Hill, with Weather Point, with the tennis courts, with Rose Walk, and eventually to University Lake. So,
all right.
I'm sorry I took so long on that, and I hope...
That's okay. You did run over, but I forgive you about it. All right, and then the other person I'd like to recognize is the chair of our Greenways Commission, Gary Juncker.
And I will be brief. Bob was the former chair of our commission, and can see that he's not quite given up that role yet. He covered a number of areas that I was planning to cover, but I welcome that and thank Bob for his thoughtful consideration there. I just wanted to mention a couple of other points, one certainly that the mayor brought up, but I want to first say that, you know, the impact on Berry Hill is it's very sensitive to that particular neighborhood with the Smith Lovell Road project widening where our front entrance is being demolished, where the elementary school has been turned into a magnet school, so we no longer have an elementary neighborhood school, and the impact almost simultaneous construction-wise in 2013 with the Greenway being constructed, so there'll be multiple construction projects occurring at the same time. And just to preface what Bob was saying, the original plan included both the north and south sides of Morgan Creek with a bridge crossing somewhere where we now know that a bridge cannot be placed. And so it included both of the neighborhoods and connectivity to both sides. So that's where the dilemma developed is, do we exclude the Canterbury side of Morgan Creek until funding can be found at a later date, or somehow try to incorporate that into the current phase one construction? And that's, I think, certainly where a lot of the discussion of the Greenways Commission over the last month or so has focused, and certainly prompted Bob's recommendation as far as an alternative plan. I'll point out also that the original phase one and the alternate phase one was intended to go to the terminal point there to the east side of southeast side of the Berry Hill Recreation Area, which is here, and to terminate there, and then phase two would carry across into the west side into Weatherhill Point and Rosewalk and other neighborhoods. If the one concern is if the phase one alternate is built and we go as far as construction can take us, as the mayor pointed out, it travels along the Duke power easement very close to homes along Manor Ridge Drive for about 80 yards by what I walked off a few weeks ago. And it also becomes very narrow in this point behind individuals' homes before crossing over Morgan Creek. And if the Greenway ends somewhere in this area, it's a terminal point right in people's backyards, basically. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't connect anything to the west of Berry Hill. Basically, I think as Bob mentioned, it serves Berry Hill. Individuals might still try to cross Morgan Creek by pipes and other manners that they've devised over the years, but it really the original intention was for that phase two, when funding was provided, would carry on and across so that it wouldn't be terminating but would be passing through Berry Hill. And I think that notion is much more acceptable to residents in the neighborhood, is that it is passing through, not just terminating. And then, basically individuals, return the path that they came from. But some concern about the overflow into the recreation area and the neighborhood itself. So certainly those are points that, we're going to have to entertain and overcome at some point as we get additional funding. But certainly create some additional stress without funds to be able to carry across Morgan Creek with that bridge crossing. So that is really what I wanted to share, and don't know if there are any other questions that from the Greenways Commission perspective that we can answer for you.
We'll let you know if there are. Thank you.
Gary. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Mark, can I just... I just want to underscore that in the September meeting and then reaffirmed in the October meeting, the Greenways Commission folks, despite having diverse viewpoints, they continue to support the Phase 1 alternative alignment because that's the plan that was agreed upon and approved at the onset. So there was a lot of conversation. I appreciate staff for capturing that in their report and in the attachment. But I just wanted the public and our board to know that there still was support for Phase 1 alternative alignment by the Greenways Commission. They continued, even though we went back and looked at it again.
So, can you move that remote?
Because
that's going to cost a fortune to build that.
That wasn't part of the original plan.
Yeah.
That's about the size of the bridge it would take.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I was part of a meeting that happened a week or two ago, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, end of September. Yeah.
With Randy and some of the folks from the Greenways Commission and the staff to discuss this issue and kind of urged it coming to this board soon because our bond authority does run out, I think. What do y'all say? Basically, like 12 months from now. I mean, not soon, in about a year or just over a year. And the suggestion that I had made at that meeting and all the things I've heard tonight don't really change my thinking about this a whole lot. But the suggestion I had made is that perhaps for now it would make more sense for us to focus on constructing phase one as originally conceived, that is to say, or anyway, the part of phase one that we can that was originally conceived, which is from Canterbury Townhomes along the north side of the creek to up to Smith Level Road and down, and ideally down underneath Smith Level Road to connect through to where the Chapel Hill Greenway will come. And then, which that project will only be, well, we don't know exactly, but it will be only a small percentage of the total amount that is available for this project, and that the balance of the money be spent then on focusing on the question of how the Morgan Creek Greenway will intersect with bicycle and pedestrian facilities on the north side of the bypass, that we look, in other words, at the question, like, you know, the Morgan Creek, Roberson Place bike mm-hmm. path comes down from the Libicotton bike trail and from the Carcourt neighborhood along the backside of Roberson Place and down to the, some people call it Trium, some call it Trium, whatever it is. but the old factory that used to be at the bottom of South Greensboro Street. But from the end of that path to from the end of the existing path at the south end of Roberson Place to get to where the Morgan Creek Greenway would be, there the facilities are very poor, whether you're riding a bike or walking on foot. Basically, the facilities underneath the bypass, really, is what I'm talking about, are almost non-existent. And regardless of how it works out in the end, as far as where we would build the Morgan Creek Greenway, how far to the west of Smith Level Road that greenway might ever stretch, you know, in order for that facility, whatever it winds up being, to really serve more than just the folks who live along Morgan Creek, but really serve our whole community, we really need to make improvements underneath the bypass there at Smith Level Road. So my feeling was that if there was a substantial amount of money that we could that's already committed from the SBTDA federal program and some matching money that's available through the bond program, that we ought to focus on making the improvements between. Now, not really through the Trium property, because we expect that to be redeveloped. Private developers will pay for whatever happens on the Trium property itself. But from the edge of the Trium property down to the point where it connects with this greenway, that's where we ought to really focus on spending our money. And that the notion of building just the... From my perspective, the notion of building just the alternative phase one, just the path that's on the south side of the creek, and abandoning the idea altogether of a connection from Canterbury Townhomes over to Smith Level Road, you know, I see that as really unacceptable. To me, the connection to Canterbury Townhomes is a really important part of the whole project. And, you know, this board had a discussion, I don't know, about a year ago or a little less than a year ago about the fact that we really need to work on pedestrian connections from the south side of the neighborhoods on the south side of the bypass mm-hmm. to the north side of the bypass so that people bike and ped, so that people who live in those neighborhoods can sort of share in the access to our downtown and the University of North Carolina and downtown Chapel Hill and everything else in the way that many of the rest of us in this community do. So, like I say, basically I guess my point is that I really feel like we ought to push forward right now with the construction of Phase 1 from Canterbury Townhomes to Smith Level Road and stubbing out to where Chapel Hill plans to come on underneath the bridge, and then spend the rest of whatever money is currently available for this project to go north from there and make a good connection up to the Roberson Place bike path and points north of there. Maybe at some point in the future, funds will be available to consider doing alternative Phase 1 or making some other kind of connection through here up to other neighborhoods further beyond, but that, to me, it just doesn't make that much sense to kind of cut off our nose to spite our face or however you want to characterize it.
Would you at some point have that really good statement in a shorter version that then somebody could move?
I can try.
Can I ask a question, too, after Lydia?
Lydia and then Sammy.
Mark, I just would like to, maybe Trish can respond or maybe you know, but it looks to me like, would that be, would that change the scope of the project in such a way that it may not be funded? I mean, that's what it kind of seems to indicate in the material that we've received, that there might be some concern that changes the scope.
It's not what we received the money for.
You know, I mean, I think we should press that question is, I guess, what I'm trying to say.
We would have to press the question because that isn't the description of the project that was approved by the NPO and isn't in the municipal agreement, and it would have to be approved by those two. You know, there would be administrative steps associated with it being done. So, I mean, it would just have to happen. That's all. I really can't speak to it. There would have to be some consideration by the NPO of sort of how it falls in the prioritization, because all of the money goes through that process of evaluating it. So there, you know, it would have to be a TCC and a TAC review.
So we could lose it.
Well, I think that it would. I don't know, but I think that it would certainly. It's a change in what is the current project description of this. So I think it's fair to say that.
Well,
and it would have to be approved.
I think that's a good idea. But one of the points made is that we need to make. I mean, there's very little time, and it sounds like October 16th is a deadline. So if we were to press it or pursue that other option, the question of, you know, what are the probabilities of losing the funding given the time constraints?
I don't know that. I mean, I think that we would have to look at the other projects that are in the are in the priority list and see whether or not it would fall out if the project were redefined. So I don't want to speculate. But we said October 16th because we were just trying, you know, we're trying to keep this project moving, the one that we have currently defined. So, but we'd have to schedule it for the TCC and the TAC's consideration.
Well, I guess, you know, my reaction to that point would be that my recollection is, you know, that while TCC and TAC rankings of various projects do factor in terms of what gets funded through. I apologize to those of you trying to follow at home for the alphabet soup involved in this, but in other words, TCC is the professional staff, the committee of professional staff from various local governments, people like Jeff and his counterparts in other local governments in our area. The TAC, or MPO, is the group of elected officials who are their counterpart. But my recollection is that while the rankings from those different groups are a factor, that, in fact, the last time we did some kind of distribution or came up with a method of distributing STPDA funds, which is, in other words, the funds that local governments actually have some genuine control over, as opposed to being directed by the state government, that allocation was done on a per capita basis based on the size of the municipality. And so my point in bringing that up is that if these dollars got allocated to us on the basis of the number of people who live in our community rather than somebody from outside our community and how they decide that how important they think the project is, then, you know, it really ought to be for the Board of Aldermen to decide what is a sufficient priority, sufficiently important priority for our community to spend those dollars on. Believe me, I'm the alternate on the MPO or TAC. Lydia is our main representative, but when we're there, we don't spend our time bickering with the city of Durham about exactly which sidewalk in Durham they're going to build. That's really kind of their business beyond a certain point. So that's kind of my attitude about this. And, you know, I would say if somehow it works out that we can't use this money to build underneath the bypass and to points kind of north of the bypass, then I would say, well, then let's use it to build actually completely the other end of this project. Let's go way to what I think had maybe been contemplated as phase three and do something along there to connect from Tennis Club Estates past the tennis club and head up toward Rosewalk and University Lake. But to me, building, at this point, from my perspective, phase two and alternative phase one are kind of speculative. And so I would like to focus on building something that we can be sure has more utility.
Mark, for that suggestion of building another phase, would we need to go to the Board of Transportation or not, given that those are already in our plan?
I'm assuming it wouldn't be as big of an issue because it's at least still a greenway on Morgan Creek, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, these are STPDA dollars. I think this is a decision by the MPO.
The question is, those dollars are allocated for this phase, or is it generally for the project as a whole, including if we decide to better allocate it to phase three, for example?
I think the municipal agreement speaks to phases one and two of the conceptual of the plan that's, the adopted master plan. Mm-hmm. So,
ma'am.
So we'd have to change the municipal agreement, the project description.
And from what you guys described, that would take 1 to 2 months for two of these, so maximal 4 months, and then you're describing 12-month window to spend the funds.
Yeah, it's very tight. I just want to make very clear that, what was it, 2006, 2007, Bill Webster came and he made he gave us an update on the Morgan Creek Greenway before this last phase that was so nicely done from James Taylor Bridge West was completed. And he gave us the vision, and we talked about the underpass. And that from that meeting and the direction from this board, the Greenway Commission started to vision the last phases that would take the Greenway from James Taylor Bridge all the way to University Lake. That's how we got here. And while I love Mark's plan, because I've always felt that that's something that's really important, that it doesn't fit into what was originally conceived for Greenway. And I just want to be clear that while I would love to do that, I feel very torn because I know that our commitment to continuing the Morgan Creek Greenway to University Lake is what the original plan was. So I just, no matter what we decide, I want to just be clear that that was how we arrived at something that horseshoed around as odd as it does, and, you know, that it was long before Smith Level Road work was done, and the plans for Smith Level Road brought us to where we are today.
I guess one thing, I'd be curious to hear Public Works to have a sense of realistically how long it takes to spend and the construction, and, I mean, just the engineering part, you know, like to get a sense of how constrained we are with time. I agree with Randy. I think Mark's point is a really good one, and I would pursue it if we had less of a constraint and less of a possibility of losing a lot of money. That is probably, it's probably stimulus. Is this stimulus or not?
Well, no. Well, that's the point that I'm going to, but come on up, George. But while you're coming up, I just want to point out, so, I mean, we are up against a certain deadline in order to be able to use the bond funds that were approved in 2003, I believe, for various sidewalk and greenway improvements. But it's important to realize that, you know, those bond funds, that's not just magic money. I mean, that's money that the town of Carrboro borrows from somebody and that we have to pay back. So I guess the point being that is local tax dollars you're talking about, how we access the local tax dollars, when we spend them, what interest rate we have to pay to cover any loans to involve with them do depend on the exact details of it. And if the bond authority expires, then what that really means is that we don't have access to the outstandingly low interest loan from Wall Street that we get under municipal bonds. But fundamentally the money we're talking about is our local tax dollars that we're contributing. So it's not like the funding source just evaporates. That is to say, if our bond authority did expire and we weren't able to pay for our 20% or whatever it is of this project from local bond funds, well, that doesn't mean we couldn't build it, and it doesn't mean that we've lost out on free money. It means that the way that we pay for our 20% has to change, and we've either got to pay that out of, you know, we've either got to pay that on sort of a current basis out of our local property taxes, or we've got to go to some other lender who will charge us a little bit higher, well, actually probably considerably higher interest rate. But the point being that it's not like we're talking about a federal grant where it is effectively free money for the taxpayers of Carrboro.
So just... to that point before we move on. So basically, I guess the money that we're leveraging is the surface transportation program money, and what you're implying is that our bonds may expire, but because we're already highly ranked, perhaps, or I don't really know what the mechanism, may still be accessible if we are able to provide the matching funds after that retirement.
I can't speak to that. I'm not sure, but I mean, my belief is that where the time pressure comes from is the desire to use those bond funds.
Well, there are two time pressures, I think. The first is that we do have a municipal agreement. It has certain parameters. There is some uncertainty about the process of having to have that go through the procedure of being the project being modified. I think it's, you know, we just haven't done that, so we need to know.
We don't know what the MPO or others will do to us.
Exactly. So there's uncertainty there. And the existing project is defined. It has a schedule. Jeff can check and say what there is a completion date. I don't have it right up here with me, but there is a completion date in the municipal agreement currently for the funds that we do have allocated for the project. So that's the fixed. Those are the fixed, you know, known facts. So there's uncertainty about changing the project because of that. And then there's
why don't you go ahead and talk about bond funds, too?
The second point is
this is what George has to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, because Trish was saying that there's STPDA and a time frame for that, for expending that money. In terms of the bonds, we're looking to issue bonds sooner than later, but then we will have the monies available, but we don't necessarily have to have the project completed construction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we'll be starting construction. The bonds just need to be issued by November of 2013, and we're actually looking to do it sooner than that. Arch needs to do some preparation and so forth. But what we're really trying to do is we've got a couple of, I hate to complicate this, but we have some other outstanding projects where we're still trying to get a handle on also. Rogers Road Sidewalk was another one that has STPDA funds as well as bond funds. But we're moving forward with those. But the plan is still to issue the bonds prior to the time and have the money generated up to the authority that the board has passed, which is the $4.6 million.
And the voters of Carborough passed.
Yes.
And to the question of time to construct within the given time frame of 12 months?
I don't know if Jeff has a better handle on the schedule on Morgan Creek. Of course, we don't have an exact plan yet as to what it's going to be, but I think our hope was to get design done next year and then start construction and would be in 13-14.
So it doesn't have to be constructed within 1 year.
It doesn't have to be constructed before the bonds are issued. As the bond authority, as the mayor mentioned, the time runs out November 13th, and we need to have the bonds issued so we make our matching portion available.
And presumably to issue the bonds, you need to, I mean, I'm assuming there's all sorts of rules that say that you need to be pretty clear about what it is that you're spending those bonds on. So it's not simply a matter of spending it and saying, well, we'll figure out, or excuse me, issuing the bonds and then saying, well, we'll figure it out after we get the money.
I think when we've talked to our, Bob Jessup, our bond counsel, we've pushed a couple of times, can we do this with the money? And it's pretty strict that it's sidewalks and it's greenways. It's not widening streets. You can put curb and gutter, storm sewer, and those types of things to build a sidewalk, but when you got to stay within those scope and parameters.
Mm-hmm.
You start putting in bike lanes, and that's not really what the bonds were for.
It didn't say bike lanes in the bond issue.
That's right. So they're not fully understanding your connection concept up to the Tryon property.
I don't fully understand that concept either.
If it's greenway, yes, but if it's bike lanes, perhaps not. That the bonding, not only STPDA funds, but as well as the bond funds.
Okay. Jackie?
So really this evening, we have to choose either the preferred or the alternate. And that's really the decision between us tonight.
And
so
and
we can so we can move forward. Is that it?
Well, I mean, we have to choose between the preferred or the alternate, or say that we're not that afraid of the expiration of the bond authority.
You don't have me there yet. I think you're there, but I'm still a little afraid of the expiration of the bond authority.
So the significance of it is that we have many ways of going to the credit markets and borrowing money from the credit markets. The best interest rate we can possibly get is through a municipal bond that's approved by the voters, such as we had back in 2003. And the interest rates on that are, I don't know, it's like 1.5% or something. It's ridiculously low. It's a very low interest rate. But that is not the only way for us to pay for the projects that we do. I won't belabor the point, but there's lots of other vehicles. It's just that you have to pay something somewhat higher interest rate that might be like 3% or 4% or 4.5%.
Now, when it comes to leveraging funds, can you leverage more money with bond
From a leverage point of view, the federal government doesn't care.
They're
going to put up 80% from STPDA. They don't care where we get our 20%.
We can take up a collection at the board table, and that would work.
Yeah. No, that won't work.
Okay.
No, they don't care from their perspective where we're getting our funds from. But I guess my point is, or my concern is, that it's sort of like, well, in the name of saving a few percentage points on on some money that first of all, we're not at all required to borrow at all. I mean, we're not required to do this project at all, any part of it. But the notion of saving a few percentage points of interest and making a rash decision and building a project that maybe doesn't make the most sense in order to save 2% is not, you know, to me that doesn't make that much sense. I mean, staff, tell me I'm wrong in what I'm saying, if I'm wrong in what I'm saying, but I'm just concerned that I'd really rather spend 2% more to make it all happen and have it result in a project that actually does a lot of good for our community. That's what I'm trying to say. Whichever of you two was first.
I think Lydia was first.
I'd like to hear Trish react to something that you mentioned, Mark, which was if we were to pursue the preferred phase one, but then try to use the remaining monies of the $480,000 match to maybe modify the project slightly with phase three or four, because I think that would be something that might be considered within the scope of the project if we're worried that the road is not, that it'll be a way to something that might make more sense than starting down the road of the alternate phase, which just kind of gets us a little bit into it. What are the pros and cons or likelihood you would see of that?
Well, I think you have some options, and we did, you know, I just wanted to preface this by saying there is a sense of urgency in that we do have a contractor lined up, they're a business, they have a schedule, commitments to us in that contract, you know, we have commitments to them, you know, so changes to their schedule, changes the production, the product being completed, you know. So we're being sensitive to that in terms of presenting some sense of urgency here. But I think that we can explore those options. You know, whatever we do, when we have a project like this, it does have to have a logical kind of beginning and end. So if we're able to pick some portions of it that have logical beginnings and end, a portion of phase one from Canterbury to Smith Level Road and a portion of another phase that makes sense, I think that we have room to, you know, work with the MPO and DOT to do that. And if that's what you would like us to do, I mean, we would need to go back and do some work on those options and bring them back to you to make sure everybody's clear on what we're doing, you know. And we would, you know, that would give us the opportunity to really clearly communicate with CJT about what we're exploring. So, I mean, I think we can do that, and again, we do have a deadline sort of with our municipal agreement and expectations that are spelled out in the contract right now. But, you know, I don't mean those as roadblocks. I just want those to be, you know, under consideration.
Sammy, if I can, sure. Mind if I just say one more thing about that? You know, I mean, in a way, this issue of our agreements with the engineers, Coulter, Jewell, and Tim, CJT, is significant. In another way, it's not. You know, we hired this company to do a bunch of engineering work to help design essentially phase one, alternate phase one, phase two of this project. But what they came back with was telling us that there were some huge parts of the project that don't work. And, you know, you could sit back and say, well, then if we change our plans in response to what our engineers tell us, then that we've wasted money somehow on that we've spent on engineering costs. But look, this is why you hire engineers. This is the point of hiring engineers, is so that they can tell you, does the plan work? You know, is it actually feasible? And you know, essentially the whole reason we're having this discussion is because they've come back and said, no. It doesn't really work, not as originally conceived. So from my point of view, it's not some kind of waste of time. And, it, you know, we hired them to answer a question, and they have answered it. And you know, we may have to spend a bunch more on engineers in order to move forward with some other aspects of whatever this, you know, whether it's headed northward or phase three of the project or whatever, well, you know, there'll undoubtedly be a bunch more engineering costs, but look, that's what engineers are here for. That's why we hired them. It's not, you know, it's not just money wasted. It's actually a lot of money saved in the sense that, you know, they're giving us that answer before we've poured all kinds of concrete and done all kinds of construction. Sammy and then Jackie.
So I feel like we've gone beyond the suggestion you'd originally proposed of studying possibly the bike path, and that could be problematic given that this is clearly greenways and that may not fit the standard. So if we are talking about identifying other phases to perhaps modify, one thing for us to consider is that in the current, what we're looking at today, both phase one and alternate phase two are going to be required. The alternate phase one is going to be required if we're going to connect to the Chapel Hill, and if phase two is going to go somewhere. So I don't see why we can't, like is suggested, do the engineering for both phases and then construct as far as we can with all that money. I don't care what priority, phase one first and then the rest for alternate or vice versa. I feel that might be pretty much what we're talking about when we're talking about identifying another phase to do it, but more secure in that we're talking about the actual current scope of what would require less approval by various other bodies.
Mm-hmm. That's not crazy.
I know that we are under a time constraint, but I do know that we have a light agenda next week, and I feel like we are kind of swimming upstream here, no pun intended, tonight. And I'm wondering, it sounds like we have some engineering kinds of questions and some dollar questions. And I wonder if next week we could get one of the engineers in to just quickly answer some of these questions, give us time to kind of mull over the information we've heard here tonight. I'm willing to make a decision tonight, but it sounds like we could use some more.
That sounds wise.
Yeah, I don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish in this wise. Either.
Mark?
I know Randy needs to get moving, too.
Yeah, it would really help to have Dan Jewell or one of the folks here to talk about the other phases and if there's a possibility of switching out and doing part one here and maybe the other part at the other end. But we don't have that information. Sure. And so I'd like to make a motion to, continue
this item until next week.
And ask Dan Jewell or one of the associates to come in and talk about the engineering for the phases.
I'll support what you want, what the board wants in that regard. I don't feel like a week's going to be so significant, but I am ready to go tonight. I do feel that what is being proposed is still, we wouldn't be wasting money. Basically, both of these legs are part of the plan and are required, and we may as well have this be the first phase, given it would cut down on a lot of hurdles that we have to go through otherwise.
I'm comfortable with that, if you want.
Well, I think that would be a reasonable decision to make. I don't know. I also think Jackie's idea is not bad. I mean,
Well, this isn't the last of our Greenway conversations. If the board feels like we're ready to move ahead, do the engineering, and then build whichever, we'll still need to bring Dan Jewell in at some point.
The only thing I know for sure is that I could be wrong. So I'm willing to think about it for another week, but willing to go with what Sammy has described. So,
but we could do what Sammy has described next week as
do
well.
Well, let me ask you this: do we actually have anything next week, or
we have one item that we could postpone if you did not want to meet? But if you want to meet, we have an item.
We go with Sammy's option, we don't have to have a meeting next week.
That's correct.
That seems pretty what lawyers call outcome determinative.
So if we go with what I am proposing, before proposing it, what's the sense of the board as to which alternative to? Does that make sense? The resolution states to study both for engineering,
but the question of using the funds to
to initiate one phase or the alternate phase.
We wouldn't have to make that right
yeah.
now.
Oh, we wouldn't have to do that decision?
The construction piece, right. That would be separate.
But it would be possible to go as far in the second portion
as possible.
I mean, you could
say it in this motion that you wanted to construct, you know, you are making
for sure phase one. Right. Because what I heard Sammy describe that I was agreeing with was for sure phase one as original.
Not
I
mean, clearly which alignment and how far in the...
Well, I guess. Well, okay. So.
Well, I don't know. I
would support the motion if what it was saying is that for sure we're going to go ahead and build from Canterbury to Smith Level Road, which is old Phase One.
Right.
And if there are excess funds in that, then we can start the alternate phase.
Start down alternate phase.
I'm okay with that.
That sounds fine.
Is that
so? With the preliminary engineering, then basically doing. Everything except this spur here.
Right,
that
right,
what,
right.
That's what
yeah.
you're saying.
Right.
For the entirety of the project that's scoped out right now, which is phase two and phase one for preliminary engineering. So, if that's what you would want
that
to
is
go
the
forward
motion.
With,
okay.
That is the motion. I do have just one quick question on the underpass because it is not really. I mean, it seems like you'd have to go up to the road anyway for alternate phase for people who want to go. West. I'm not clear as to the value of the underpass.
That makes the connection to the Chapel
Hill. Right, but yeah. You can make that connection through the walkway, which people who are coming from the east, from the west, will have to do anyway.
The Chapel Hill plans go underneath the
underpass. Yeah, Chapel Hill's planning on stubbing out underneath Smith Level Road there. That's the idea.
Let me just caution, because this hasn't come up at all, and we just really have to throw it out there, because the Greenway Commission talked a lot about the fact that, you know, if you go with the preferred phase one, which is the north side of Morgan Creek to the bridge, okay, if that's built, and then at a later point, where the alternate is to make the connection from Chapel Hill side around to University Lake, what you're in effect doing is you're creating two parallel greenways. Yep. I want to have everyone be clear that that's what you're doing.
Wait.
Because Greenway spent a lot of time talking about that.
I hear you.
I don't see the two parallel in that phase one connects to Canterbury and doesn't stop.
But one's on one side, one's on the
other. One's on one side, one's on the other.
There's half a mile there that you're doing that you would wind up doing on both sides.
And Greenway Commission absolutely saw the value of having the preferred route of phase one north, but also felt that it could be done, with maybe it doesn't have to be 10 foot wide. It doesn't have to meet the same standards of DOT that the rest of the Greenway, just to have that spur from Abbey Lane to the bridge. So realize that was one of the things that Greenway spent a lot of time.
And why would it not be the same standards, given that it seems like every time we are leveraging funds, it seems to be from DOT, and that's one of their requirements.
Yeah, well, STPDA, does that require it?
I think that would be,
you know, if we were not using those federal dollars,
right.
We would have the option of building it in some other fashion, like if the town used its own resources or... We would not need to meet those design requirements.
Although we'd still have to meet ADA, I think.
I think we wouldn't have to meet necessarily.
Yes, we would want to meet ADA.
That was the notion.
Right. Yes.
If it were from a different funding source that didn't have those strict requirements, it could possibly be built with different specifications.
Yes.
Mm.
So that would be an argument to do the alternate phase first.
And we'll let the staff figure
correct.
It out. All right. We'll let the staff figure that part of it out. How about that?
All right.
So that was Sammy's motion.
So clarify, because I want to be real sure what you're saying here.
We're going to do the preliminary engineering for both phases, minus the leg that crosses. And the construction will be phase one to Smith Level from Canterbury to Smith Level, and whatever funds that remain, construction on the alternate phase going west.
Beginning
Smith Level.
To the extent we can, alternate phase one starting at Smith Level and heading upstream. Mm-hmm. Okay. And is there a second for that motion?
Second.
Thank God. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor, can we also attach, there are some other points that I feel that are in the resolution. If we can, along with what we just passed, which was essentially for point one and two,
uh-huh,
include three and four.
What did they say?
Having staff pursue with NCDOT your idea,
right,
in some other way, and also exploring bike ped. I think those are natural.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so that's a second motion. Is there a second to that?
Matt,
all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
I just wanted to know if you, number two doesn't speak to the mayor's, the point you were making about the south Greensboro Street, Smith Level Road pieces. That would be another, but I think it's clear that you want us to explore that. So
I mean, I think it's clear enough. We would like to hear about that if it works. If it doesn't work from a funding point of view, then
okay.
I'm perfectly happy to let it go.
I be excused?
I have a
family matter.
Moved and seconded to be excused. Randy, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Bob, if you can consolidate it down to two sentences.
I'm going to speak as an observer. I can't really speak for the commission, but as an observer of the commission, or my perspective of the commission is on a grand scale of things, I'm fully supportive of that lay going to Robinson. It's just that this project was, the way the project was designed, our institute is a funding district that we're working on. And that's why we need to make
I'll follow your point. All right. Thanks, Bob. All right. That brings us to item – do we need to take a short break, or shall we go right into it? Item D2
–
D1. Oh, right, because that wasn't D1. D1, a request to consider proposal from Orange County Partnership to End Homelessness to ban the box, town employment application.
Okay. Mayor and members of the board, this is an item that was brought at, I think, call to audience by the Orange County Partnership to End Homelessness, and essentially it's a consideration by the board whether or not we want to ban the box from the town employment application. So if you'd like to have a staff report, we can do that, or if you know enough about it and you want to end the discussion.
I have a question about the report that was in the market.
Desiree White.
Okay. Come on. Michelle.
So I had a question about the part in our staff report that says that the background check, so that there's the box currently on the application on
That's
the first
correct.
Page or second page?
It's on the first page of the
on
application.
On the first page.
Under general information.
And then the background check does not inquire about criminal history, so which makes me wonder then how the box is currently used.
The background check does inquire about criminal history.
Oh, it does?
Yes.
And a conviction. Okay. I just read that wrong then. Okay.
So you're saying you do a criminal history box checked or not anyway?
Yes, box checked or not. That is correct. The only thing in not having the box on the initial application could, in some cases, delay the hiring process in that staff may have found out some information that would disqualify an applicant later rather than sooner.
I have a question. What positions include the use of an assessment center process?
It just depends. Most of the time, they're the department head level positions, some positions in the police department, most of the supervisory level positions.
Okay.
Go ahead, Sammy.
When you say disqualify an applicant later than sooner, what does that mean? Because, I mean, part of the reason for doing this is so that that doesn't happen.
For example, if an applicant has been convicted of embezzlement and applied for a position in the finance department, as we indicate in the abstract, we may not want to consider that applicant for a position in finance. If we found that out sooner, which if the box was checked, then we would have that information, as opposed to taking the applicant all the way through the application process and doing the background check at that point.
I'll call on myself. I'm not sure how I'm going to vote on this.
Mm-hmm.
I like that we would do criminal background checks regardless, because I think there are things we need to know. We have children who are on town property. We hire people who work with children. We hire people who have free reign of town hall, town properties. And part of our baseline responsibility is to make sure folks are safe, the folks who work for us and the folks who are on our property. My two main concerns, I think there are some crimes that people commit, they serve their time, over and done with, get on with your life. There are other crimes, particularly those some violent crimes, and certainly sexual predators, people who commit sexual crimes. I'm not always sure that those people need to be working on town hall and around kids and around people, around women in an open situation, without our knowing about it. And there are some people who commit crimes of sexual violence who are not rehabbed, and studies show that. And people who have extreme anger management and lash out and hurt other people. I don't know if those are people with a history of that behavior. I'm not sure that I feel comfortable saying for my whole town, okay, that's fine. You can work for Parks and Rec. You can work interacting with our community. You can openly, easily be in the same building with our other employees. That's why this isn't an easy question for me to ask. I get it from the hiring people who are homeless perspective. I get it. I care about it. I also care that I want to know who's working with the kids in our community, and I think each of you that has kids, you want to know that. So there has to be a middle ground. There has to be a way where we're not hurting the guy who was serving time for simple possession, or we aren't hurting the person who made a couple mistakes. But, you know, frankly, people whose crimes involve violence, I have a lot less sympathy for. And I don't know how we differentiate there.
If I might add, Jackie, of course, we are going to continue to do the background checks. This is certainly not to suggest that we're not going to do them. The Orange County Partnership to End Homelessness was suggesting that we not ask this question up front, that it will be a little later in the process. But we will still continue to do background investigations.
What's the advantage of not asking it up front?
They feel that – I'm sorry.
Serving on that committee, okay, and having participated in the conversation when the group made this recommendation or endorsed this concept, you know, I think the concern is that basically that if you check yes, I've been convicted of a felony, that, you know, your application goes straight into the circular file. Now, I'm not saying anything about – I have no idea what your procedure is, but I'm saying that's the general concern, is that employers simply never get past that question to do – you know, in other words, that the background check doesn't actually happen because employers – far too many employers see that box marked yes and say, well, I don't need to know anything more than that. And what they're tossing out is potentially the knowledge that, you know, your felony conviction might have been 20 years ago, it might have been, you know, on a drug charge as opposed to some type of sexual offense, or it might have been, you know, anyway. Point
okay.
being, you know, that in other words, if there's no inquiry,
if you toss out
the application before the inquiry ever happens, then into what was the nature of that crime.
But it's not saying that there's not going to be an inquiry.
No, right. Not at all. Absolutely, there's still going to be an inquiry. There's definitely going to be an inquiry into that before, I would hope, before anybody comes to work for the town of Carrboro. Mm-hmm. But,
okay.
You know, I'm sorry, you're waiting to speak, but if I may really put kind of a finer point on it, you know, for example, You'll recall, I don't know, about 8 years ago when a member of our community was told that he was not welcome on the at the Weaver Street lawn by Carmel Mall Management, and that he couldn't come out there and dance. And I don't believe I'm revealing any kind of private information of his to say he spent many years in jail. He's a convicted felon. I don't even know what his felony was, but he is, I think anybody who knows him would say he's not the same man now that he was 20 mm-hmm. years ago when he was convicted of a felony. And so the point is just seeking to have the person evaluated for who they are and evaluated on the basis of what it was that they were convicted of.
Yeah.
And served or possibly underwent.
And that doesn't mean that we put on some kind of blinders about the fact that there are certain types of crimes that we know the statistics overwhelmingly bear out that, you know, people who commit pedophilia do it again and again, and that, you know, they can lie their butts off about how reformed they are, and they'll still commit it again. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to. There's no expectation that anybody would overlook that.
Okay.
But the point is that we would look at, you know, you what the real circumstances were.
Okay.
And if I can just stay on my soapbox for one more second and just say that, you know, in a lot of cases, I tell you, here's sort of the classic example of a problematic situation is some dude starts dealing drugs and eventually the cops catch him and he's driving in his car with his girlfriend. And they bring charges against him and his girlfriend. And they say to him, if you will give us the names of additional people, we'll plead you down. And they say to her, you give us the names of additional people and we'll plead you down. Well, he's got other people to name and they plead him down to a misdemeanor. But she doesn't know the names of other people to give them. And she gets a felony conviction and he gets a misdemeanor.
And that happens, doesn't it?
It happens all the time. It happens a lot. And she winds up serving some fairly hard time for that. And she's got a record for the rest of her life that says that she was trafficking in cocaine because she was riding in a car with a guy who was actually trafficking in cocaine. Now, I'm not saying that's what the situation is every time.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, honestly, there are, and it's not always a woman and it's not always a man and whatever, but honestly, over and over and over, that pattern repeats itself. You talk to people who are criminal defense attorneys, you talk to people who are district attorneys or United States attorneys, and you'll hear them admit that it's a huge problem. But the prosecutors come down just as hard whether you're passenger or driver, because from their perspective, how are they supposed to know whether who paid for the coke and who has all the connections and whatever? That's the concern from my perspective.
Okay.
It's fine. I mean, I think the background check covers it, and that there's the reason they're bringing this up is because there's bias, and you named all that. So
okay.
I'm supportive of taking the box off and having it later in the process. Or
yeah, absolutely, have it in the process.
Doing that anyway.
Is that a motion?
Yeah, I move that we. What am I moving down? That
ban
we
the box.
Ban the box from the first credit of the process, then, so it's not on the first page of the application. But where would it be then?
Delay it to the stage that it
exactly. And if I may add, with the police department, they have a supplemental application on the personal history statement.
That's a
different
situation.
Absolutely,
that's
and that will continue to stay.
Okay.
And we don't mean like on the first application, take off the box and then have a second paper.
To ban the box.
No, but the point is that
later in the process.
Yeah. After we've gotten to the point where we decide, you know, who it is that's getting some serious scrutiny.
Yes,
that's correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
I second Michelle's motion.
All right. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Item D2, cameras installed as part of the signal system upgrade project. Mr. Major.
So I'll ask Jeff Brubaker to give a brief summary.
Yes.
I don't actually have a formal presentation on this item. There is information in the agenda packet, and I can answer any questions if board members have any.
I've got one question. It says Traffic Operations Center of the town of Chapel Hill. Is that a public works or police? Do we know?
It's public. It's part of public works.
Public works.
And it says that we may, that the town, if we requested the cameras to be taken down, I mean, I know we can request for them to be turned off, but versus taken down, that we may need to reimburse NCODOT. Do we, what, it, like, do we know if we need to or we don't, or right now we just know we might need to, because it would be helpful to.
Yeah, I think that what the communication was when it was asked was may need to be reimbursed. So we don't know more specifics about that.
When will we find...
If we ask them to take them down.
So they can just shut them off and leave them there and it won't cost us anything. Is that true?
Actually, that's not clear.
That's unclear.
Oh, I feel like, yeah.
And they'll always be there.
What we do know is that it's NCDOT owns the cameras and they are okay with the camera streams not being broadcast on the internet and not being given to media for instance, for the purposes of traffic monitoring, but only streamed to the Traffic Operations Center in the town of Chapel Hill and the operations staffers who are responsible for maintaining the signal system.
If you don't mind, if I could jump in for a second. I understand what it is that some members of the board may be concerned about these cameras, but I think I just don't see a real problem here, and basically we've installed this huge signal control system upgrade so that. The folks over at the engineering department of the town of Chapel Hill can control all of the, which, incidentally, in case you don't know, all traffic lights in Carrboro are operated by contract with the town of Chapel Hill. So that the town of Chapel Hill can have control, sort of remote control from Chapel Hill Town Hall over the way that the various traffic lights are operating so that under unusual traffic conditions, they can manipulate the lights to help clear the intersection or give preference to the place, the direction that everybody's trying to travel or whatever.
Okay.
And, part of the purpose of the cameras is so that people at Town Hall can look on the computer monitor and see what is actually happening at the intersection.
My concern isn't that. So I just want clarity, okay? These cameras are not used for, like, that red light thing. Mm-hmm. Are they used? So they don't take pictures if they think that you've run the red light. Do they then take your picture and send you a ticket? It's not that process? Because that process screws
sucks.
Up a whole lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not that process. Okay, because my objection was to that process. So my objecting to the cameras is stemming from my misunderstanding, and I'll admit that, of how they're used.
I would like to suggest, if members of this board are interested, that we ask that we propose to the town of Chapel Hill or whoever the relevant powers be are. That we have some type of interlocal agreement that spells out for what purposes it can be these cameras can be used.
Okay.
That the purpose is for traffic management and not for some kind of law enforcement or investigation type of functions. Not that the purpose is that would essentially say they're not allowed to let their police officers sit up there and continuously monitor who's driving how or where people are.
That. I know there's a company.
No, I know, but I'm saying
this isn't part of that.
No, that's definitely not what it's being installed for. But I'm saying, in other words, that we could go further and say you know, that the towns agree that not only is that not the purpose, but it's not allowed to be used for such a purpose, so that it's not some kind of George Orwell kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
That's
good.
My thought.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea of the cameras. I feel, you know, in as much as it's a benevolent purpose initially, it's there and could very easily be used for other purposes. And so for that reason, I'm averse to having that kind of infrastructure in our town. And I'd be curious to know, I mean, for one, I mean, an obvious constraint is what it might cost the town of Carrboro. So I'd be wanting to know what it takes for us whether it actually would cost $28,000, because that may be a significant barrier. And if it does cost so much money, then for us to think of creative ways to pay that back. So, for example, when we looked at Smith Level Road, we granted the easement because that's just a process that towns do in exchange for the infrastructure. But next time that happens, we could look at getting our money back.
Call them back and say we want $28,000 for the
easement. Right.
Okay, so I like Mark's idea of trying to move along so we can watch at least the end of the fight with the final blow delivered. I like Mark's idea of inviting them to come and just tell us what it is they're doing.
And could we include with that further investigation on the cost question?
All right. I think it would be helpful to know more specifically what the costs are. And I'm assuming we have some kind of contract with Chapel Hill.
Let's see
that's the basis for them operating our traffic light system for us. So, you know, some kind of amendment to that contract, or anyway, some kind of term in that contract that would restrict the purposes for which the cameras could be used.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we get an affirmative information about what it would cost to remove them, and that we explore with the town of Chapel Hill amendments to our agreement with them to potentially limit the scope of how these cameras might be used.
Can we possibly? Yeah, I made that motion.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Okay, Jackie.
Can we move 4 to our next meeting? Contents are really long.
What is item 4?
Oak Avenue. Oh,
me and all these people have been waiting to hear.
Oh, that's why people are here. I'm sorry. I thought you were just watching. That's all right.
How about if we just move on with our agenda quick? How about that?
Okay.
Request to make an appointment to the planning board, item D3. What do y'all want to do?
I would like to nominate Adamson because of her experience on Alabama Avenue, and I think she could represent a true neighbor perspective on the planning board, so I would move Adamson.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded.
I'm supportive of that. I just do want to recognize that we did have a very strong candidate pool, and that I wasn't so clear in where, and so thanks for being clear about that. And I was very impressed by Catherine and the way she represented the community and spoke out and all the research she did. So I feel very comfortable supporting her, but I do want to make that point that we did have a lot of really strong candidates and encourage them to continue pursuing this position.
I want to echo what Sammy said. I mean, they're all very strong candidates, and I think having seen Catherine, that makes a difference to me, but they all were excellent.
Okay. That brings us to all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, matter passed unanimously. That brings us to item D4, if we could have a brief staff update.
I'm going to take a
There's information in your agenda packet. This is the item regarding a follow-up questions that the board asked about the Oak Poplar Neighborhood Traffic Plan, which is a plan that proposes traffic calming measures and other recommendations to improve bicycle and pedestrian and motor vehicle safety in the neighborhood. And the information on those eight questions is provided in the agenda packet. If need be, I can pull up the presentation that was given in March by the consultants, Martin Alexiou Bryson, who crafted the plan. I can pull up the report itself. And just one quick point with respect to the West Main Street Road Diet, which, of course, is an associated project with this. You may have seen some temporary paint out on West Main Street. That's kind of a preliminary visualization by NCDOT staff as to what the different lane widths would look like. And they initially had thought they might be able to do a temporary restriping this fall of the road diet. Now it looks like that won't happen. But they verbally told us that it looks promising that you know, we've always expected that this project would happen, a Main Street road diet would happen during the resurfacing of the road. And I think every indication we've gotten so far, without being 100% sure, is that the road would be eligible for resurfacing next summer. So that would mean that the road diet could be is less than a year away.
Yeah, Jeff, the road diet and the restriping, there's some manholes along West Main. Do you know, are you familiar with where those are?
Some of them.
Will those still be, will those be in the bike lane, or once we do the road diet, will they be in the bike lane, or do you know?
It depends on, I know where, the one I'm familiar with is there's one in the middle of the intersection of Weaver and Main. I'm not familiar with all the manholes. Perhaps George knows more, but usually, you know, in other bike lane situations, maybe not.
I'm sure George knows more about something. Dad, I don't know. He looked.
Anyway, if you look at Fidelity Street and some other streets, sometimes the bike lane just traverses the manhole, and you hope to have as flush of a grade as possible. So the bike lane wouldn't be diverted in any way. Mm-hmm. It would maintain its position 6 feet from the. 6 feet from the curb.
Yeah, that's something I just want to look into a little bit. I heard from a citizen that saw the stripings and kind of, oh, the bike lanes are going, you know, right over the manholes. And then I was trying to remember where we were kind of dieting and whether it was in that spot or not. So.
Yeah, we can certainly look more into that and communicate with the NCDOT staff who are working on this project.
Okay.
Sammy.
I'd like to thank you very much and commend you for including greenhouse gas emissions as a consideration. That is valuable. The other question was, the first question is, the Poplar having it be a two-way for bikes, it's mentioned that that's never been implemented in the U.S., but in European, and I'm wondering if that means it's not implementable in the U.S., or it just hasn't happened. We could do it if we so wanted. And part of that question is because on Poplar Avenue essentially functions as a two-way bikeway. Like no biker.
Not officially, but.
Not officially, but de facto it does. So why not just make that official and take pride in it?
Currently, the town code has specifically prohibits bikes from using the walking lane on the north side of Poplar, of East Poplar. And, of course, you know, there's nothing in state law or local ordinance that permits a vehicle to ride. In fact, it's prohibited ride in the opposite direction as in the same lane as, you know,
there isn't
as motor vehicle traffic.
So yeah, I mean, in theory, you could.
I mean, you see a lot of cyclists riding west on East Poplar, and you know, is it, you know?
As far as we know, no one's ever gotten a ticket for it.
Traffic's going so slow that, you know, there's plenty of room to, you know, in that situation, which is not legal, there's plenty of room for the cyclists and the motor vehicle to shift. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it's not allowed in state statute or local ordinance.
It isn't allowed.
No, it is not allowed.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And there's also a little bit of a theoretically a kind of a liability issue for town government.
To take it official.
Well, I mean, you know, even the eastbound direction, that is, say, the going with the flow of traffic, used to formerly be marked as a bike lane along there, and Wayne Pine, the anti-bike lane cycling activist, came and made a big fuss about how it didn't meet any of the standards and for a bike lane, and how the ditch was deep, and if somebody ran off the road, that they were going to sue us. And we, 6 or 7 years ago, therefore changed the designation on the road to remove references to it being a bike lane in the eastbound direction. Forget the westbound direction, because it didn't meet any of the standards, and we were concerned that if somebody got into an accident, that they would, you know, try and bring a kind of slip and fall, in my view, more or less bogus lawsuit against us. And part of the reason we went ahead and did that was not just the concern about the possibility of a lawsuit, but also the reality that nobody cares what it says on the road out there. People are going to use the road the way that they use the road. And as far as westbound, the problem is even worse from a liability point of view. Lydia?
Yeah, I just wanted to know if there's an item discussing the possibility of the one-way street on Oak Avenue with the striped sidewalk, and there was a notation that you were seeking comments from the fire department. Did we get any comments from them?
No, we didn't actually receive any at this time.
Okay.
So I'm just thinking about steps and moving forward and wondering, so the 16,000 to 24,000 for the traffic analysis, that's not in the budget for this year, because we haven't said that we wanted that to happen.
Right.
But it possibly could be for next year, it seems like. And an interim step, it seems like, could be this the traffic calming measure with the cones, like the one that's on James and Hillsborough. Is that right? It's on James and Hillsborough. That there is a suggestion for that to be along Oak, although it says in here the aesthetics of the cones, some people don't like them. And so it seems like that could be a step just to see how that would work now that we could move forward with. And then I assume decide if we want to do this traffic analysis. I'm also curious about whether the community the folks who live on that street actually are interested in it being one way or not. I know that they came to one of the meetings mm-hmm. before, but before we spend $16,000, seems like we'd want to know if they actually want it to be one way.
Based on the conversations I've heard on our neighborhood Facebook group, I would say there's definitely some interest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
there's also at least I should
some
full disclosure there were also some people who were definitely against, but against
more
that,
people
but there
want
were
it.
It was there were a lot of people interested.
It just seems like before we move, I mean, if folks are interested in that. We might.
I can arrange for them to all email you if that's what you're asking.
I know, I believe them. I'm just wondering if we can move forward.
Yeah, I agree.
Do the cones and then.
I agree with Michelle. I mean, I think my next step would be to seem to ask staff if in next year's budget we could have the TIA, the traffic assessment, the traffic impact assessment. But I also could, even though I know a lot of folks on that street have spoken to us about the possible one-way direction, it would be perhaps just informative to see if any of them had anything further to say to us, particularly because some of these other decisions rely on whether we make it one way or not. For instance, that pedestrian island at the intersection of Oak and Greensboro, I mean, we really need that.
Yes.
We need it yesterday,
yes.
But we don't necessarily want to do that until we determine whether we're going to do the one-way Oak or not. So,
And I think it's worth considering that a lot of the school buses coming to Carver Elementary do come from the north. They come mm-hmm. down Greensboro Street and turn right onto Oak Avenue. So
okay.
there's You know, I mean, saying, well, they can just come down to Shelton Street and turn right there, that works fine in passenger automobiles, but in a big, long school bus, that intersection is tight, you know, so that's not necessarily that feasible. And very busy in the morning. And those of us who are trying to go the other way would really appreciate some school buses slowing down the traffic, but I guess, you know, anyway, my point being, do realize that the interest of the school buses trying to get to the school is an important one. Perhaps there's a way for it to be, for there to be a bus-only lane on the southbound direction or something like that. But anyway, I think it's all just a little more complicated than immediately meets the eye. But I definitely think it's worthy of study. Mm-hmm. All right, so somebody make a motion so we can get out of here.
I guess I'd like to move the attachment and be it further resolved. I think that we have a follow-up item on our agenda where we have some type of item where we can hear from the public about their feelings about Oak Avenue becoming one way, and perhaps at that time we could get follow-up from the fire department and perhaps the school system or any other impacted entities.
And do you want to give any specific direction on any of these other things?
Well, they seem to hinge on, at least some of them seem to hinge on our determination of the one way. You know, like the raised pedestrian island, you know,
I guess it's not recommended
to pursue that until we resolve the one way conversion. Mm-hmm. That's the one that really jumps out at me.
I was thinking more of the striped sidewalk, but that also kind of depends on the one way street.
Do the cones also depend on that too? The speed bump or table on Oak Avenue? Because they would be where the...
It doesn't...
I mean, couldn't we move forward?
Typically, that goes through the residential traffic management plan process that we have for traffic calming requests. There's nothing in that process that speaks to temporary traffic calming measures. I think in the case of Hillsborough and James, what you had was a Safe Routes to School action plan recommendation and testing out to see how effective that would be. But typically, traffic calming measures will go through that process.
Yeah, because there are different issues. It's how the traffic moves. I mean, I don't know anything about traffic, but how the traffic moves and also the speed. So it seems like doing number 5 would help with the speed, at least, whether it's one way or not, right? And that's part of the issue for folks who live on the street is how fast people drive down that road.
That's correct. The best way to lower speeds is not through posted speed limit changes, but through the design of the road, and that includes traffic calming measures.
We have a speed table, which, as you point out here, has done some good at the 100 block of Oak Avenue.
Yeah.
What would number 5, where would it be on number 5? Because we already have one, you know what I mean?
I mean, looking at some, this is new information. We took some speed data just last Thursday and found that speeds in the 100 and 200 block are about the same as they were, a little bit lower actually compared to the 2007 data. Up towards the 500 block, they were a little bit higher. They were in the 26 to 29. These are 85th percentile speeds, so the speeds at which 85% of drivers travel either that or lower. So 15% of drivers drive above this level, and they were 26 to 29% on the northern end of Oak Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to add that to the...
Well, I mean, I don't want to just decide right here and now that we're going to do it unless, or more to the point, without feeling that it's going to have, I mean, an impact. Because, I mean, on the one hand, I hear the data you're citing. On the other hand, people who live in the 100 block of Oak Avenue feel, some of them anyway, feel that it hasn't done all that much. So I don't want to spend a bunch of money to do something that's not going to be effective.
And then maybe it could be just as part of our...
Or even not perceived as being effective.
Well, when this comes back to us, we could say any continued update or conversation about a speed bump, and the neighborhood could speak to that as well.
And, you know, it's that 15,
I mean, that makes sense to me.
It's that 15% that's really of concern, because 85% of people can be just fine or a little less than fine, and then you get 15% that come hauling down at 40, 45, that's who's going to run over your cat, you know?
Or your dog.
Or your neighbor.
Or
yourself.
Yeah.
Maybe more to the point, any of them. Yeah. No, it's true. Sammy?
I'm still pursuing this poplar crossing. I understand that it's hard because it's challenging because there's a 100-foot crossing. But I know that for the southern portion, it was also challenging because it's a huge swath of pavement, and that's being pursued and resolved through the putting in of an island. Looking at the aerial photographs, on the northern portion, there's a really wide curve that I think I would want to see an exploration of putting in an island there in the same way that on the southern portion is being done. And the reason I keep bringing this up is because this has been brought up to me by many people in our community as a concern for them. So what I'm talking about is this corner down here. It's just as wide. If you could add a triangle up in that section there and have like the turn lane in the same way that it's being treated there, you'll minimize that 100-foot length. I mean, it's pretty extreme right now, but you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is ridiculous.
And it is a recommendation of the Safe Routes to School Action Plan that an island be placed right in this location.
And is there a reason why we can't, given that we're doing all these paintings of lines, and even on Poplar, it looks like there's some painting of line there, that can't be included in this project in the same way that we've done up there?
Well, I mean, that's something we could certainly look into.
I would love to hear more about it. Thank you.
All right. So,
can we include that?
Yeah. So we'll include that as one of our recommendations. Right. So I made that motion.
All right. Yeah. It's been seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Power passed unanimously.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right. PTA thrift shop. All those in favor? Are there any questions for the staff on this?
No.
All right, is there a motion?
Move the item.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Oh, yeah. All those in favor, now that Michelle has seconded it, signify by saying aye.
Michelle
has become
celebrated.
All those
opposed. I do need to go home.
Matter passed unanimously.
Last week, Mr. Anniversary.
Yeah, we're obviously it's late and we don't have a significant chunk of our board here, so we will pick up our personnel matter
November the 13th.
November the 13th, 3 weeks. Well, because we don't meet on election night, and we're not meeting next week.
No, doesn't it?
You've been here ready for the second one?
Three years.
Just copy the first one.